Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend Brent Beard. It is time once again for Second Helping, the go-to show for fans and followers, the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. And Brent, interesting weekend involving Southeastern Conference football. We had a harrowing experience for the Georgia Bulldogs on the road in Lexington, Kentucky. We had some more non-conference action. Some of that went quite well for the Southeastern Conference.
Yes.
Some of it, not so much. We had quarterback news around the league. So no shortage of topics once again.
Yeah, and as our show mascot,
Chino
makes makes an appearance. he was on the little board, so he came in when he heard your voice. But I can tell you this right now. I'm not happy about that Vanderbilt result.
Oh, dear.
And our guy Diego fought to the end. But Trav, that Vandy D let him down at the end, did it not?
Yeah, that was a team loss, though. I'd like to tell you that Diego played lights out, and it just wasn't enough. But Diego, he wasn't his best. I don't think. You know, we should have known better. Vanderbilt 2-0, going on the road to Georgia State. Not what you wanted to see. And we'll talk about Toledo and Mississippi State coming up a little bit later as well. But Brent, as we typically do here on the program, on the heels of another weekend in the Southeastern Conference. And by the way, we are live. So if you'd like to check in via the comments, we would certainly encourage you to do just that. There's your guy, Tex Titer. It says, yeah. Howdy, boys. I thought I was the mascot. Well, you're our Lone State Star mascot.
Absolutely.
Chino kind of leads things off on a weekly basis. But great to hear from Tex Titer. Again, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel here, we hope you'll go ahead and take the time right now and hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications. And if you wouldn't mind, hit us with a thumbs up, a like. That would help us out a good bit as well. But again, we like to go through the SEC in a couple different ways on the heels of another weekend, and we do our superlatives. There we go, right there. Week three superlatives, Brent. And what we'll do is we'll start with our surprise of the week. It can be a pleasant surprise where SEC teams are concerned. It can be maybe a not so pleasant surprise, because I think there were a couple of those over the weekend as well.
Yeah, I would go with my surprise would be Kentucky. I want to see a show of hands, as our buddy the late Greg Larson would say, on the interstate, as far as how many people thought Kentucky would come back and play as well as they did. Just a stout performance by the Wildcats and a difficult 13-12 loss. I get the fact that Travis and Mark Stoops have gone for that on fourth down instead of punting the ball. But and I'll never forget something Wimp Sanderson. I know this is basketball, but people will get it. Wimp Sanderson said one day, he said, "You can never tell how players are going to play from one game to the next." And wouldn't Kentucky a great example of that, Travis?
Every week truly is different. I know, last week it was Alabama fans that were up in arms following that close call with South Florida. Mm-hmm. And this week it's Georgia fans, after a one-point win on the road at Kentucky. That was retro football up in the Commonwealth Saturday night. And that was like Vince Dooley against Jerry Claiborne or something.
Yeah, really.
From back in the day. But the Dogs do get it done. Not a prolific night offensively for Mike Bobo's group, to say the least. Kentucky defensively was give the Wildcats a lot of credit. But Georgia's defense ultimately, when it mattered the most, took care of business. Once Kentucky did cross over the 50-yard line in that game Saturday night, Georgia's defense really went to work. Kentucky did not have a red zone trip in the football game. So, hey, all the props in the world to Kentucky special teams, coming up with four field goals. Had 3 points, had a field goal in every quarter of that game Saturday night, Kentucky did.
Yeah, and Georgia's defense, as a matter of fact, they've been great keeping teams out of the end zone. Guy, Trev, I'm curious what you thought about Brock Vandergriff, the former Georgia transfer. I thought he had a gritty performance. I mean, it wasn't something that is going to win him a Heisman Trophy necessarily in throwing the ball, but I thought he showed a lot of poise. I thought he showed a lot of toughness. At times, he was just able to tuck the ball and run and get some crucial first downs. So kudos to Brock Vandergriff, who Kirby Smart spent a lot of time with his former quarterback when the game was over.
Yeah, Brock Vandergriff kind of reminds me of a poor man's Haynes King, mm-hmm. the Georgia Tech quarterback. Mm-hmm. They kind of get it done in the same way.
Yeah,
toughness certainly for both those guys. Maybe a poor man's Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart, a very tough guy at the quarterback position for the Ole Miss Rebels. I'll say this. I mean, you know, Kentucky was 2 yards short of having a 100-yard rusher against this Georgia defense. But again, situationally, Georgia was very, very good despite getting just 160 mm-hmm. passing yards offensively from Carson Beck. Trevor Etienne, I thought, flashed at times. Dom Lovett came up big. I guess I'm also just still looking for more explosiveness from this Georgia offense. And had a big injury too, right, to that offensive line Saturday night.
Tate Routledge is out indefinitely. They're not saying it's year ending, but he's in a walking boot and a knee brace. So I think it's safe to say that with that sprained MCL and sprained ankle, that it's going to be a while before he gets back. And one thing I've learned from you years ago from your playing and brother Chris's playing is when you get now that MCL wasn't tore, but as you said, that thing can be sore for quite a while. So I'm sure for Routledge, getting out of bed is no easy chore over the next few weeks.
And very big, because we know what's coming up next after the bye week, that matchup with the Alabama Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa, an Alabama defense that at times has looked suspect to the run game. So that's going to be a big part of that matchup and something that we'll certainly talk about more as we get into next week. But what about a player of the week in the Southeastern Conference for you, Brent? I know there were a couple of quarterbacks. Once again, this is kind of a weekly thing that put up big numbers, it seems like, but maybe it's a defensive guy. Which way would you go with your player of the week from week three?
I would probably, I know this is easy, but I would go with Jalen Milroe and what he did. Didn't have to throw a lot, but when he did, 12 of 17, nearly 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, added 75 yards rushing, and 2 touchdowns, really a incredible performance. You could see the improvement in Jalen. Certainly some toughness. I like the design plays that they've got for him. Some people might argue that he ran maybe too much 14 times, but when you've got that ability for explosive plays, the number of times he's able to get the ball, I think is a small price to pay for what he can come up with.
And trust me, defensive coordinators on the schedule for Alabama, this is the Jalen Milroe they don't like to see.
Absolutely not.
The one that they saw in the first 6 or 7 mm-hmm. games of last season, they take that guy every day of the week because
absolutely.
For whatever reason, a year ago, it was much more about staying in the pocket, being more of a traditional passer. And this guy has too many gifts to sort of limit him to that. Mm-hmm. And he does have more design runs, but a lot of these are on RPO too, where he has the option to throw the football. So it's not just that, you know, they're asking a lot of him with this new staff in terms of his physical attributes. They're giving him opportunities to make reads and make decisions where RPO is concerned, especially, and continues to be devastatingly effective. Jalen Milroe, 5 more touchdowns that he accounts for in Alabama's dismantling of host Wisconsin over the weekend. That was the sort of performance from Alabama in general that I'm sure Alabama fans had more in mind when you talk about really all three phases. Did miss a field goal from the transfer, Graham Nicholson, but James Burnett was lights out punting the football. You know, defensively, again, still wonder a little bit about that group against a legitimate run offense like the one it's going to see in a couple Saturdays from Georgia. But otherwise, takeaways were there. Explosive plays on offense, continued red zone success. Ryan Williams, the freshman receiver, continues to play at a high level. The running back situation is very, very good. Got dinged up a little bit in that game, but it sounds like a couple of those guys, Malachi Moore, who's very important, obviously, to what Alabama does, should be okay, you would think, for Georgia. But Quay Rousseau, the edge defender, maybe some question about him, Brent. Richard Young, the third-team tailback, goes down. You know, they've got some guys that they got to get right before that matchup with Georgia.
I'll tell you what, and they don't really have a clear picture yet. I think of Richard Young. That may take a day or so. Rousseau was extraordinarily important, I think, for depth later on the year, the way this season is going to play out. But one group that they were really together, and I think we were waiting on this to see how this is going to happen. But that offensive line with Proctor and Booker and Brasford and Roberts and Pritchard, I mean, when you look at those numbers, they allowed two pressures. They had two penalties. So overall, that group at times really took over the game, didn't they?
This was a team in the South Florida game that struggled at times to protect with six or seven guys.
Well, yeah, really.
And what we saw as Saturday's game moved on, as you pointed out so succinctly there and accurately, is that, you know, Caden Proctor, that left tackle position, can cure a lot of what ails you on an offensive line. And they were able to protect pretty well with just five guys on more than a few occasions. So that's extremely encouraging, again, with knowing what's coming up, because it's not just Georgia. Yes. Missouri will stress you.
Yes.
You know, we're finding out South Carolina has a legit defensive line situation now that Alabama will see in early October. And that's before you get to Tennessee, who obviously likes their guys up front a good bit as well. What about the team on the rise in the Southeastern Conference? Maybe a team that earlier week one, maybe even week two, hit a bump in the road, maybe had a little bit of turbulence, but then impressed you with their week three performance. Who would that be for you right now, Brent?
I would say LSU on the road at game day in Columbia, a much better South Carolina team than we thought would see. An LSU team that obviously dropped a difficult opener to Southern Cal is really kind of slowly getting themselves back together. And I mean, down 17-0, frankly, and then trailing less than 2 minutes to play. Trev, how about Caden Durham? That's another guy we can mention, 11 carries for 100 yards. He kind of, I won't say he came out of nowhere, but they were very pleased to see that performance. The defense still has a good bit to go. Brandon Swenson had 3 sacks and 5 total tackles against South Carolina. But I would go with LSU kind of, you know, have they righted that ship? I don't want to know if I'm going to go that far until we see a little bit more from that defense, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit more, especially when you consider that between the two of them, Lenoris Sellers, and really if you include Robbie Ashford in this as the replacement for Sellers after he went down with the injury against LSU, the two quarterbacks, along with Raheem Sanders, Rocket Sanders, rushed for about 250 between those three guys. So, yeah, big picture-wise, obviously still some work to do. Garrett Nussmeier, give him some credit. I don't know if he was great on Saturday, but he is a guy that even when he isn't great, he's going to keep coming at you.
Absolutely.
I think South Carolina is kicking themselves considerably because they had that game right on their plate. I know they missed the field goal late to tie it, but it could have been put away before it really got to that situation. But I agree. I think with LSU, you have to give more credit. You have to hope, if you're an LSU fan, that there's continued improvement coming on the defensive side of the ball, because Lord knows there's still a lot of room for it.
Boy.
But you hate it for, you know, you hate it for South Carolina too, because Sellers was seemingly starting to really get into a groove, had the explosive play of his own on the ground on Saturday. But LSU deserves credit. Crazy for LSU. We talked about this in the run-up to the weekend. LSU went into that game Saturday without a rushing touchdown through two games. But Durham, as you said, the young back, 11 carries, 98 yards, two touchdowns. That'll work. That'll work most weeks for that LSU offense. Let's talk about the team on the decline in the Southeastern Conference. Got a few you can pick from there. I think some of them have already been in this sort of free fall. Florida. But maybe another team that, you know, even if they lost in week two, you thought, well, this is going to be a bounce back opportunity. A team like maybe Mississippi State, for
example. Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. I would also, I know we brought this up earlier, but Vandy, and I'm not saying Vandy is on the decline. I think there are times
you got to win that game, though.
Yeah, but you do. You do. Yeah. Georgia, Trav, forgive me for this. Georgia State students rushing the field after that game.
Yeah. First time. Well, I guess even the Sid Breen play at the plate for the Braves was in Fulton County. So I can't say that stadium or Hank Aaron's record breaking home run in 74. Yeah. Maybe the World Series victory for the Braves years ago in that park.
Yeah.
But hey, I mean, give Georgia State credit, but boy, if you're Vanderbilt, you scored 22 points in the fourth quarter and still lose. I mean, that's hard to do, and that's what Vanderbilt did. They kind of waited until it was absolute desperation time. Looked like they had saved themselves late. And you're thinking, well, Georgia State's just going to try to go down and get a field goal with about a minute left or so, maybe 57 seconds, something like that. Hell, Georgia State goes down and gets in the end zone, and wins the game. And, boy, if you're Clark Lee, too, and you're a defensive guy at heart, that had to really, really hurt before you jump on the interstate and make that short drive back to Nashville.
Well, I'll throw this in here as a side note. Vandy has just one turnover this season. That is a bright spot for them, to say the least. And look, the way our guy Diego runs around, kind of Johnny Manziel-like in some ways. It's amazing they don't have more than that, but give them a lot of credit for that ball security.
Yeah, weren't able to really run the football against Georgia State and put a lot on Diego, and he's fine with that, but that's a tough one. That's a tough one for Vanderbilt, no doubt about that. So let's talk about this after the week three results. Which SEC team going into week four, in your opinion, Brent, has the most to prove?
Oh, I would say Oklahoma with Tennessee, Josh Heupel coming back home. So my thing with that is, and it's a very obvious point here, I think we know that their defense can keep them in this game, but Trav, and what they don't need to do, and we touched on this earlier, is they don't need to get in behind, 10-14-0 and try to chase points in this situation. So my thing would be, can that Oklahoma offense, which has question marks to say the least, how will they perform against Tennessee? And I know we're getting this a little bit later on, but I think every game right now, people are looking at that Oklahoma offense that did score the 39 points, the win over Tulane. And the question is, are they making progress?
Caught a lot of heat back in the preseason. We did our reasonable expectations for teams across the SEC. We went team by team. And a reasonable expectation I had for Oklahoma wasn't all that favorable.
Yeah.
Not a prediction, But based on how the first three games of SEC play lay out for Oklahoma, mm-hmm. with Tennessee this week, then at Auburn, and then Texas in Dallas, and I still feel like today it's a possibility, at least, that Oklahoma could start SEC play 0-3. Now, I know Auburn has been anything but world beaters through the first couple of 3 weeks, but with the quarterback change, we'll see. That game's still going to be played at Jordan-Hare. And the problem I continue to have is that Jackson Arnold, once a game at least, puts that team maybe in a tough spot, most recently with a pick six against Tulane. Defensively, I'm with you. I'm ready for that Saturday night. Yeah. I'm ready to see Danny Stutzman and that Oklahoma defense against Nico and all those guys, Dylan Sampson, and that Tennessee offense. But the offense for Oklahoma is going to have to give them something. And the concern I have for Oklahoma, too, is we know that there's turnover on that offensive line. You've talked about that more than anybody.
Yes.
And we know what Tennessee feels like it has in that defensive front. So that could be a tough matchup for the Sooners coming up this week. I like that pick there of OU as the team with the most to prove. So let's look around the SEC in terms of other performances of note. We talked about LSU, South Carolina. We talked about Alabama, Wisconsin. I guess the team of the week easily could have been the Missouri Tigers, because Missouri was the only SEC team over the weekend in a matchup against top 25 competition in Boston College. And look, that game kind of lived up to it, man. Boston College, impressive early. Missouri answers, physicality. I thought, you know, pretty good quarterback play. Maybe the difference in the game is Castellanos turns it over a couple of times for BC. And, you know, we wondered about a continuation of that defensive effort that we had seen under Blake Baker at Missouri before he moved on to LSU. And so far that looks pretty good, Brent.
It does. And Trav, my the guy I want to mention about Missouri, you know, that thicker kicker is no longer there, but Blake Craig. What about Trev? What about 4 out of 4? Mm-hmm. And had a significant 56 yarder before halftime. So is there a kicker factory somewhere in around that university? But boy, he really came up big in that game, didn't he?
He did, and the run game was what Missouri needed it to be with Nate Noel. 121 rushing yards. Your guy, Luther Burden, wondered a little bit about him from a health perspective going into that game. He answers with 6 catches for 117 and a touchdown. And he really didn't get going until the second quarter, really? It seemed like. So really? Brady Cook continues, you know, to kind of still, crazy as it sounds, under the radar perform at a very nice level at the quarterback position for the Missouri Tigers. So nice win for Missouri. Our guy Diego going to take on Mizzou coming up here next. And, you know, this is crazy to think about in that it's week three and we had choices for superlatives of biggest surprise and team on the decline. And I guess we're so far beyond Florida already. 3 weeks in. Neither one of us had Florida for the biggest surprise in that they were thumped on their home field by the Texas A&M Aggies. And we didn't even consider Florida for team on the decline because we already knew that. We already figured that after 2 weeks of the season, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's so many issues here. You can almost have a show on Florida, frankly. But, boy, the thing that sticks out to me like sore thumb is when you're allowing 227 rushing yards against Division I teams, that's a problem. Now they'll get a little break this week because State's not good, that good at running the ball. But man alive, it's just a litany of issues. And again, I'm sure you've heard similar things of what I've heard. I mean, I'd heard going into the weekend, if they had a Miami-like performance, there could even be something done with Billy Napier over the weekend. Now, that didn't happen, the people wondering now after Mississippi State that they've got a bye week. I mean, I still think it's going to happen unless they have some unbelievable resurrection on that football team somehow. But look, I think you said this well last week, and I'm hearing this similarly from Florida fans is, Trev, they've just moved on. I mean, they moved on from Napier. I'm not sure they haven't moved on from the schedule at this point, as far as when they are. And I mean, I'm hearing more, and I'm trying not to be too disparaging, but it's just the reality of it is when we get an experienced, competent coach, you give me a call. Otherwise, I'll see you next year is what I'm hearing from some Gator fans.
Yeah, I also wonder if you do go interim, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, if you're going to do that, the bye week coming up would seem to make more sense.
Yeah.
But then also, when I think about this Florida staff, there's not really a name that jumps out at me.
No.
As an obvious interim, and it's still so early in the season.
Really?
I mean, you're going to pay Napier regardless for the remainder of the season.
Right.
I guess the side of it, too, is that you don't, at this point, want to give him a chance to go on like a Dubosian run in 1999 at Alabama, and then the next thing you know, you keep him for another year.
Yeah.
Just kind of delaying the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, you said it. This Florida defense, they make up for being awful against the run by giving up explosive plays in the passing game. I mean, you got a first-time starter in Marcel Reed for Texas A&M. He averages over 10 yards an attempt on Saturday. Le'Veon Moss goes for a 110 on 18 carries. It's rough, man. It's rough. And, boy, you said it with this game, and we'll talk about Mississippi State coming up here in just a little bit after that performance against Toledo in Stark Vegas Saturday night. Couple of the very worst run defenses around those two.
Real quick with this, I'm not sure I have seen a defense that simply cannot communicate anything. Trav, we'll do this briefly. Is that a lot of the reason? And look, not only are opponents completing passes, I mean, they're completing passes and there's no one within 5 or 10 yards of the receiver.
It's an indictment of the coaching staff, you know, first and foremost. But when I still look at Florida, I don't see a lot of Florida dudes I've seen in the past. I don't see a Kevin Carter.
No.
I don't see a Brandon Spikes. You know, I don't see the kind of guys on the back end that you're used to seeing. It's a problem in a number of areas for Florida right now. Let's talk about the Arkansas Razorbacks picking up that second win of the 2024 campaign. Had to work for it. UAB goes into Fayetteville, jumps on the Hogs early. Hogs sleepwalking a little bit after that close loss out in Stillwater the previous Saturday. But Arkansas comes back on the strength of a 17-7 second half, ends up winning by 10 in Fayetteville. Talon Green, I talked about him after the Oklahoma State game. He is a thrill a minute.
He is.
If nothing else, as I've said for a week now, he is fun to watch.
Yeah.
But fun's a relative term, right? If you're an Arkansas fan, sometimes it's not all that fun to watch because he's kind of like Jackson Arnold. And that at least once a game, at least with Talon Green once a game, there's going to be this what the heck moment.
Yeah.
And he nearly threw another pick six in this game against UAB on Saturday. But Jaquindon Jackson, another big game on the ground. They've got their big three, right? Between Green, Jackson, and Andrew Armstrong at the wide receiver position.
That's
a pretty good trio. If Green can continue to develop in the ways of game management details because the perceived little things show up a lot with him.
Oh yeah. And Tramp, how much does it help Bobby Petrino that Jackson is putting up what about 150 yards a game? My stars, I know it was UAB, but he averaged basically 10 yards a carry. I had this thought a minute ago, Trav, what if Jackson obviously is there. What if Rocky Sanders had stayed? Would they have had enough balls to get to the running backs? What in the world would that have looked like? But look, Jackson's becoming a superstar before our eyes, isn't he?
He is. I'm happy for Rocket Sanders, but I get the sense that Arkansas felt like it was upgrading at the running back position, and so far it's hard to argue with that based really on is. Jackson's production to this point. Again, good to see Sanders having success at South Carolina as well. The Ole Miss Rebels, we kind of wondered about this game in the offseason and into the preseason, especially where it fell on the schedule, but no problem for the Rebels. 40-6 winners over Wake Forest in Winston-Salem. Jackson Dart does it again, 377 passing yards, a couple of touchdown passes. Henry Parrish Jr. has kind of emerged as that top guy at the running back position. He has another big game. Trey Harris is a dependable option at the wide receiver spot. Boy, Ole Miss, we got accustomed to them doing this type of stuff under Lane on the offensive side of the ball. But what gives you the thought that they could be something more than just a New Year's Six type of participant is the way they continue to get things done on the defensive side?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And Pete Golding deserves a lot of credit for and I've been as impressed with them defensively as I have anywhere else. And my stars, we talked about how much Lane loves to run the ball. What a coup it was to get Henry Parrish back, and how he has done. I know you caught this, and I've got to mention it, but because it's serious, but it's also almost hysterically funny. Trev, Ole Miss beats Wake Forest so badly that Wake Forest cancels the game next.
Writes a check for $1 million. And Lane talks about it immediately after the game in the press conference.
Lane wasn't happy with that one at all, was he, Travis?
No, I don't think Lane was happy about that. We're happy with Jonesy, though. He's here tuning in live on the program. Yes. He says, hope you guys are doing well. Love listening to you both. Well, thank you very much, Jonesy. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Chiming in here on a Monday night. We know you got options where football is concerned on a Monday night, but glad to have you nonetheless. What about the Texas Longhorns really making easy work of UTSA last Saturday night in Austin? Big story there. Quinn Ewers goes out with the strained oblique. I think I used to have an oblique muscle. I haven't had one.
Yeah.
You know, I filed like a missing muscles report on my oblique from about 35 years ago. But yeah. Arch Manning, I think in some ways, especially in a game like this, this was an unexpected treat. You don't want to see Ewers hurt.
Right.
But hopefully it's not of the situation where it's long-term. But boy, Arch Manning comes into the game, throws for four touchdowns, runs for another. His most impressive play of the night is the way he basically went coast to coast on a run. Looked like his grandpa there.
He did.
Archie. Certainly more so like Archie than Peyton or Eli, but still get it done. The Longhorns do in pretty easy fashion. The true freshman wide receiver, Ryan Wingo, with a big night. And Texas, coming off that road win at Michigan, makes it look pretty easy against an in-state opponent.
And look, if anybody can prevent a quarterback controversy here, I think it would be Sark. And I'll tell you this, I really appreciate Arch Manning's attitude about this. Now, he could have sulked and he could have left, but I think he knew that he would be handed the that Lambo that they've got on offense at some point, and that he's kind of grown up in this. I mean, to me, Arch is kind of unflappable. That may be the thing I like about Arch, and I'll throw Quinn Ewers in there too, is I think their attitude in dealing with the pressure that you get with Texas, there are a lot of kids who could learn from that, couldn't they?
They could. Tex Titers here in the show chat says, Wally Pip incoming. Wow. Tex thinks that Quinn could be in peril in terms of his job status. I, you know, when I watch Arch, I see probably more Eli than I see Peyton of the demeanor that you're talking about. You know, Peyton was a pretty fiery guy, pretty animated. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that even when he made checks, you couldn't help but notice him because of the gestures and the the Omahas and, and everything else. But of course, Arch is the son of Cuppa. And Cuppa was a wide receiver back in his day. So maybe that's where some of the speed comes from. But Tex Titer says Wally Pipp coming maybe for Quinn Ewers. We'll keep it moving here. Boy, Mississippi State. Yay. Not good for Jeff Lebby's team coming off that road loss at Arizona State the previous week. Come home. Let's get well against Toledo, a MAC conference opponent, although Toledo came in at 2-0, which should have told you something right there. And then maybe, you know, get one against Florida the next week. But boy, it went anything like that for the Bulldogs on their home field as they were dismantled 28-3 at the half. Yeah, Toledo was in the lead at Davis-Wade Stadium. And it doesn't get any easier either. I mean, well, I guess maybe it could. Florida's coming to town. But beyond that, you know what awaits Jeff Lebby. I think Texas is not too far down the road. Boy, tough, tough road ahead for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, it is. I still think he'll do okay. He's got some guys like Kevin Coleman, the wide receiver, 7 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown. So he was one of the few bright spots. But I tell you what, to see them just be dismantled like that in that play. Trev, this crossed my mind. What kind of quips would one Mike Leach have come up with after a loss like that? I'm sure he would have been in rare form, would he not?
Oh, think about Jackie. If he were still around coaching Mississippi State, Toledo, the Rockets come in and do that to your program. But yeah, we'll see how Mississippi State responds to that with the Florida Gators in town next. What about the Auburn Tigers? Talking about quarterback situations, Hank Brown in, Peyton Thorne out, Brown with 4 touchdowns in Auburn's 45-19 win over the Lobos of New Mexico. I think one of the things I found most encouraging when looking at this Auburn offense is seeing Jarquez Hunter go off.
No doubt.
Because that's what you expect from him at this point against a defense like New Mexico's. He goes for a 182 and a touchdown. Keandre Lambert-Smith, the Penn State transfer, has a nice night. I've heard from Hugh Freeze in the last 24 hours or so. He's saying, look, we got to get this youngster Malcolm Simmons really involved more. But really what Auburn needed. Now, we'll see, right? Arkansas coming up. I think that's going to be a fascinating matchup.
It really is.
Because you got quarterback situations for both those teams that are intriguing, to say the least. You got a couple of backs for both those teams that can really get it done. But at least for this night, Hank Brown shows you what you want to see, I got to think, if you're an Auburn fan.
I'll tell you what, the point you made about the running game really needs to be repeated. Listen, Hunter was breaking tackles. He was shifting and moving, and unlike I'd seen him in a long time, and that running game is going to take a lot of pressure off of that Auburn passing game. Now, look, you and I both know when you get in the league, for Hank Brown, there's going to be some real growing pains coming up. So he certainly has something to build off of. He got some confidence. But, Trav, you and I both know over the next few weeks that Auburn passing game is going to be tested severely starting on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting in terms of how you can protect Hank Brown too with that offensive line. But if you can run it in a fashion similar to what we saw from the Tigers in their latest outing, that would certainly help in that regard as well. Keeping it moving here, you know, a MAC team that didn't have such a good time in the Southeastern Conference on Saturday night was Kent State. Boy, look at that halftime score. 60 5 to nothing at the half. Tennessee with a school record 37 first quarter points. Nico EMI Lava throws for 173 yards and a touchdown. Dylan Sampson, Deshaun Bishop in the run game, Dante Thornton, those receivers. Tennessee gets a shutout on the defensive side. This was a kind of physical and psychological lift I think you want going into that matchup on the road in a homecoming for Josh Heupel coming up out at the University of Oklahoma.
I'll tell you one thing, too, in their running game, and I understand it was Kent State, Dylan Sampson basically has 100 yards every game. Bishop ran for 120. They averaged 17 yards a carry. Man, that's going to take pressure off of anybody when you think about that. So, but again, and my question to you, Trav, you know, you're up 30 to nothing. That onside
kick.
Was Heupel, did Heupel want to get that on the film for somebody and just decided he needed to try that out then?
Well, you do that, that's when you get Eli Drinkwitz telling you at midfield, we stand on business, Josh. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tennessee, Missouri post game last year.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But Heupel's got a little spurrier or something in him. You know, I can't quite figure him out, but.
Yes.
Boy, 71 points with 65 of those coming in the first two quarters. Just two field goals for Tennessee in the second half. Pretty much shut it down. And again, the matchup in the Southeastern Conference coming up this weekend with the Oklahoma Sooners in Norman. You're going to have Alabama on the bye. You're going to have Georgia on the bye, obviously. We'll have plenty of games to look at, though, coming up later in the week here on Ryer on YouTube here on Second Helping. But, Brent, anything else before we get out of here?
I just remember this, and this may have been just someone making this up, but I'm wondering if you heard this. As I read something today that after the game Saturday night, and I tend to believe this is just urban legend, but Kirby had the dogs out practicing on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
Have you heard anything like that?
I haven't heard that. You know, I mean, there are teams that do practice on Sunday.
Yeah, they do.
But that's planned.
Yes.
Now, you know, I know Saban's teams never practiced on Sunday.
Right.
So I would assume that Georgia typically doesn't.
Yeah.
So if that happened to be the case, yeah, that would seem newsworthy. But I don't know.
Yeah. If it happened, we'll know sometime this week.
Yeah. Just hope they weren't out driving early Sunday morning.
Oh, really?
And with that, Brent, I think we'll peel out of here on the latest edition of Second Helping. Brent, always a lot of fun. We'll get together later in the week and we'll preview another big weekend of SEC action.
Good, pal. Look forward to it. Always enjoy it. And I hope everybody has a great week. And thank you for, to all the folks who listen and watch tonight.
Yeah, the live viewers, and we appreciate you. And again, if you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. Also, a like, a thumbs up would help us out as well. Travis Ryer for Brent Beard. Once again, thank you. And until next time, so long, everybody.